Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Trek Talk with Tech and Kirk. I'm Techman16.
And I'm Strange Kirk.
Good introduction. I like that. All right, today we have a man. No, we have a machine. He's beaten Bobby Flay. He has shut up Gordon Ramsay. And he makes my blood pressure jump about 50 points just by looking at his food. Today we have Cook. How you doing today, Cook?
I'm doing great. How y'all doing?
Thanks, man. We're doing pretty well. Thanks for being here. Appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day between mining systems and making all that food. I'm glad to know you're able to join us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Let's jump right into it, man. How did you get into Star Trek? And what's your favorite series?
My favorite series was always Voyager, because Voyager is what got me into Star Trek. Although DS is awesome.
Boom. That's right. You and me, unpopular opinion. Suck it, Kirk.
I moved from California to New York in summer of 2000. And I couldn't sleep at night because I was used to it being like midnight was 9 o'clock for me. So I would be like surfing the TV and ran across reruns of season 6 of Voyager just before the season 7 premiered. And I got really into it. And I started reading more that year because Harry Potter got me to start reading, because before then I wasn't much of a reader. And in that first year, I became a huge reader, and I read like, I don't know, 100, 200 Star Trek books. And just totally delved right in. And by the end of that, of 2000, 2001 year, I practically was an expert on Star Trek.
So, the books, are they more fun than the show, or would you still prefer the shows?
I prefer the shows, but it's really good when you can enjoy a show so much that when you're reading the book, it's like watching the show play out in your mind. You know, you hear everyone's voices, the way that it's said, you're reading their words, but you're hearing it in your head and you visualize everything. It's fantastic.
I'm not an expert on the books, but I do know that what the books try to do is they try to use a couple of the episodes as a kind of a tie-in. Right, where you're reading and you're kind of like, oh yeah, I remember that part because I watched it. Is that true?
Yes and no. I mean, if you read the Time 2 series, it's fantastic, and it's an entire series of books that essentially take you from Star Trek Insurrection into Star Trek Nemesis, and then the aftermath of what happened to the Enterprise after Nemesis.
Let's just go ahead and point out that I feel like Star Trek Nemesis is probably the least popular of the movies. Anyway.
It is the least popular, aside from probably Star Trek V.
Well, did you know that Tom Hardy apparently committed to it and was really excited about it? He was a huge Star Trek fan, and that almost broke his career.
Yeah. It almost broke his career, but there was a lot of other actors and actresses who their careers practically started because of Star Trek. You know, Kristen Alley was in it early in her career. Christian Slater had a cameo in Star Trek VI because his mom was the costume designer and he was a huge fan of the show. What's her name? Kirsten Dunst, when she was a kid, got her start on Star Trek The Next Generation, playing as a telepath in an episode.
Now, with Kirstie Alley, she
was in the middle of her career.
Star Voyage
Trek
Home?
The Wrath of Khan.
Oh, is it The Wrath of Khan?
Yeah, she played Savick.
Yeah, you're right. She also played Savick in The Search for Spock, right? And then she was replaced in Star Trek IV.
No. She wasn't in Star Trek IV. She was replaced in Star Trek III. I always forget her, the one's name who replaced her. She didn't want to be in a second Star Trek film.
Who so was
she was
it?
Only in Wrath of Khan.
Who was it in Star Trek The Voyage Home? Because if I recall correctly, that was the one where they tried to write in a part for Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
And he declined it because he didn't like the script, though he was a pretty big Star Trek fan. He declined it, so they ended up writing in, I can't remember her name, but the woman who was one of the scientists at that institute, the Oceanography Institute.
It's kind of ironic, because if you ever watch the show Seventh Heaven, the husband and the wife were both in major people in Star Trek films. The husband played Captain Decker in Star Trek The Motion Picture, and then the wife played the doctor at the Research Institute in Star Trek The Voyage Home.
Yeah, it's a shame about Captain Decker there, about his personal life. I don't know if anybody is listening really knows, but I think he admitted to inappropriate relations with underage people, sentenced to time.
This episode's fast becoming a confrontation.
Yeah. Catherine Hicks. That's her name.
Yeah, that's right.
I looked it up. Dr. Jillian Taylor.
And we're just nerding out on Star Trek here. I mean, what else? What more do you want?
I mean, I could do that for.
So, all right. So that's how you got into Star Trek in general, was Star Trek Voyager, and then you read the books, and then what series did you watch after Voyager?
I'd watch all of it, whatever was on TV at a time, and then I eventually ended up watching all of it. I have the original series, the animated series, and all of DS9 on DVD. I even have season one of the original series on HD DVD, because I was one of those idiots. Virgin Megastore at 4 a.m. to get in line to get that at the premiere.
So the animated series, I was talking about it at one point. I don't remember if I referenced it, Cook, but did the animated series not seem to you like the same people who created the Beatles Yellow Submarine were involved in the animated series? Was that not like an entire LSD trip every episode?
It really was. I mean, it's hilarious too, because in the original series, they came out with transporters to save money on shuttlecraft scenes. And then in the animated series, they were like, well, we don't want to design a spacesuit, so we're going to give you these belt shields that are...
The bubble shield. And I was wait a minute. Where was this technology in the original series? Or they just kind of go, boing, and they can walk through space.
Yeah, that's what we like to call lazy writing.
I feel like, to be honest...
Oh, lazy drawing.
To be honest, I feel like because of the popularity of it, everybody was into it, and they were so limited by technology at the time for special effects. When you go into a cartoon, you can do whatever it is you want to do. I mean, geez, one of the first episodes, they had, like, plant people.
Oh, I know. It was
and then
great.
They cloned Spock, and he was, like, 50 feet tall, and it was this outrageousness. And it was almost like you want to pick up the phone and go back in time and go, hey, man, put the joint out before you start writing.
Yeah, they really went off the wall with the creativity that they could have, except for that thing with the stupid bubbles.
Yeah, that was absolutely... You can create plant people and 50-foot Spocks, but you're too lazy to draw a spacesuit.
Exactly.
Anyway, one other thing that we didn't cover that Tech normally brings up, and I might be beating him to the punch, is favorite character. It's one of the most important questions.
Nog.
Okay, that was left field.
You gotta elaborate on Nog.
Yeah, that was left field. We need to hear this.
Nog is the best written character in all of Star Trek. He is the only person that you see in Star Trek that you literally watch him grow from a boy to an adult and grow through the ranks of Starfleet, and you see him mature. Jake does a lot too, but not as much as Nog does. You see Nog start off in the very first episode where he's stealing from a shop. And he can't read or write. He has these misconceptions about women because of how he grew up. And he goes from this to being a engineer, even becoming a chief engineer after O'Brien leaves. Well, I guess that's in the books. But he becomes a lieutenant in engineering from not in over the course of 7 years from not knowing how to read and write. And you see in future episodes, like The Visitor, which is one of the best episodes ever, where he becomes a captain, you know. He also goes, you get to watch him go through PTSD after the siege of AR-559 or whatever it's called, after losing a leg. And you get to see, you know, a battle on the front lines. You know, just he's so well written, and you see him evolve and grow more than you see with any other character in Star Trek.
So, in other words, it's just the totality of the backstory that he has and the progression that you have. He's probably that's why he's your favorite.
Yeah,
he's the most completely written character from start to finish. Where
exactly?
Yes.
He goes from zero to something. By the way, he was chief engineer of the USS Valiant.
True. He was, yes. As long lasting as that was.
Before that ship got blown up by the Jem'Hadar.
Yeah, well, that just goes to show the egos of kids when they have too much shit going up their heads. I'm sorry, was that
a stimulant?
Yeah, stimulants too.
Space meth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it is space meth. Got a hypo spray for that.
Jesus.
So,
ladies and gentlemen, this episode is already falling apart. Please tune in for more.
I'm sorry.
It ain't falling. What are you talking about? This is the most Star Trek heavy episode we've ever had. Most people that are going to listen to this are going to be like, what the fuck did you people just say?
Well, because I think we've talked about it before in private. I don't know if we've ever brought it up, because we've actually gotten to the point now where we've done so many episodes, I kind of forget what all we've covered. Squirrel moment. But, you know, a lot of Star Trek fans, and I don't mean any disrespect to those of you who are not as in-depth as some of us are, as far as the backstory and even some of the goings-on behind the scenes. But your lay Star Trek fan is not that into it. So they don't, you know, unless it happened on their favorite show, you know, they haven't seen every episode of every show like we have. You know, they haven't watched the animated series. A lot of people don't even know the animated series exists. So a lot of people listening, you know, like, geez, oh, Pete, man, nerding out. But it is kind of nice for us to be able to just actually be able to, you know, have guests on that know exactly what we're talking about and can relate and can also educate us. So it's pretty cool.
You could almost nice to be talking Trek.
On that note with PTSD, right? It actually mentions, or there's a subliminal message in that episode where Nog becomes addicted to the holodeck.
Yeah.
I don't think that's ever really covered in any Trek show, how you have this amazing piece of technology that can replicate.
Are you forgetting about Red Barkley?
How is it that nobody...
Barkley.
First of all, how is it the holodeck is always open?
Reg Barkley.
Yeah, Barkley.
Barkley has holo addiction like several times, both in Next Generation and in Voyager.
Yeah, and in because in Next Generation, he was having trouble with his social anxiety, so he was recreating crew members in the holodeck to try to ease his anxiety and feel like more normal.
Yeah, and he tried to like have Troy as the goddess of love.
Yeah.
and then you had the three musketeers.
Yeah, it was Data. Was it Data, Picard, and LaForge?
Yeah, and Riker was pouty little like guy.
Yeah,
yes. with a high pitched voice.
Exactly.
And then you take that to Voyager, where he became addicted with the Voyager crew and a Voyager simulation.
Right, yep.
But that addiction also helped.
Was he addicted, or was he trying to find a working on his Pathfinder project?
He was working on the Pathfinder project, but he became addicted to the point that he couldn't sleep in his own quarter, in his own bed anymore. He could only sleep in his holographic quarters.
Yeah, and he was addicted. It was definitely alluded to the fact that he was addicted in the Next Generation episode, where he's trying to cover his social anxiety. And, you know, a good side note on Star Trek, I feel like Star Trek does a great job of bringing to light a lot of, mental illnesses that plague people every day. As someone who suffers from, Tourette syndrome and ADHD, amongst some of the other things that I've had to deal with in my past life, and I can tell you that it's very real. So seeing that, it's kind of nice when people take the time to write that in, to kind of bring that to light, especially with that episode you're talking about with Nog with PTSD. It's a very real thing. And so it is nice to see that that is covered, even if they do it in a humorous way.
Most definitely. I think they do some of that stuff so well. And it's one of the reasons I like Star Trek. I grew up with learning disabilities. Like I said before, I couldn't even read much as a kid until I started reading Harry Potter and then Star Trek. Star Trek gave me ways to get around my ADHD. I couldn't focus in school for anything until I fell in love with Star Trek.
Yeah, ADHD is a very real thing. It's something that I've had to deal with all my life, and there's so many common misconceptions about it. You need to hear ADHD, and you get people that either think that, you're a problem person, you can't function normally, or you get the people that go around and say, oh, that's just made up, it just means kids have more energy. It's really not.
No, but I do say to people all the time that working in a kitchen environment, that having ADD is actually a good thing. And that as long as you learn to use it as a strength and not a weakness, mm-hmm. then it could be your best friend.
I've spoken at different things, and I've been to various classes and spoken to children because of my previous line of work, and I've spoken to other children that have had ADHD. And the one thing I'll tell them is that, your brain, the way that you perceive things, is not the way that your quote unquote, average person is going to perceive something. You're going to worry a lot. When something bad is going on, you fixate on it. And so, like you say, being able to use that to your advantage, you can kind of turn the tide of what you're doing, especially if it's a task that you need to get done. If you can focus that energy, you will blow people out of the water.
Oh, yeah. Using ADD really helps when you have to deal with a lot of different things at a time. I could give you a quick story about just Saturday night. When I had to hold down the entire dining room, I was doing the grill, the bar, the takeout food, and I had 5 tables in the dining room that I had to do all myself because my servers were busy with our outdoor dining.
All right, so shout out to Star Trek for bringing these things to light, and thank you for helping to raise that awareness. But I digress, Tech.
I have no idea what the hell your people are talking about. I am not ADHD, so... You guys and your problems, man. I'm glad both of you found Star Trek so that can help.
Tech's over here on mute talking to his wife. These guys are nutters.
Anyways, I forgot where I wanted to go with this.
Are you sure you don't have ADHD?
Sure sounds like it.
I was actually focusing on something else while you guys were talking about ADHD. I'm like, oh, okay. In the meantime, I can check.
Oh, so you weren't listening.
Just like ADD, don't worry.
Don't worry. I was listening to everything you said.
Uh-huh. So what did we say then?
Well, you were talking about how your servers were outside, outdoor dining. You had 5 tables. You had to do the bar and the grill yourself.
And the... in the takeout window.
Kirk here was talking about how in his previous line of work, he had to talk to people and children about, ADHD and how your brain works in different things and how you could use it as a strength and you perceive the world differently and you're fixated on different problems. So, yeah, I was fucking listening. Fuck both of you.
This episode shall be titled Squirrels.
Definitely.
So I guess to bring it back to Star Trek a second.
Did we leave Star Trek?
Yeah, I guess we were talking about Star Trek at one point.
We're somewhere out there with the Curiosity rover at this point, buddy.
So to bring it back to Star Trek, how did you find Fleet Command, and how did you get into it?
That's actually kind of a sad story. I was in a really, really awful relationship with a person who restricted me on pretty much everything. I've always been kind of a, you know, go with the flow. I don't really make demands or anything like that. You know, if you tell me to do something, I'll do it. I don't really care. So this person took advantage of that easygoing personality of mine and wouldn't let me, like, be on my phone, wouldn't let me, you know, do anything outside of work. And she would, like, take my phone and stuff. And we actually had moved in together because she was very good at manipulating me. And it ended rather abruptly and rather badly. But once I was free from her, I kind of, like, said, you know, screw it. I'm going to do everything she told me she didn't want me to do. And the first thing I did was I went and downloaded some of the games I used to play before, like Jurassic World Live. And then I saw an advertisement for this game, and I said, oh, it's Star Trek, and, you know, I'm just trying out a bunch of games right now, so I'll try this thing out. And that's how I started playing the game, being rebellious.
So, to whoever that person is, you're a dick.
Yes, she is.
She'll probably never hear this, but if she does, she can suck one.
Fight me in real life.
Five. I don't. Since you're more super Trek nerd oriented, do you like New Trek? And I define New Trek as anything J.J. Abrams 2009 beyond.
Are you trying to put Discovery and Picard in that too?
Yes. Yes. Suck it up. It's my podcast. It's part of New Trek.
I agree.
I will call it a hybrid.
It's written by Alex Kurtzman. Okay. All right. That's New Trek. This ain't no Rick Berman shit. I digress. Discovery, Picard, the new movies. Like them.
I like what they are doing for fandom, that they have brought new fans. And I can set an example of my server. I got him to play the game with me during the shutdown because we were spending so much time at work just hanging out. And I got him to start playing the game. And then I got him to watch the 2009 film because he's more of a action guy. He likes Rocky and stuff, which Rocky is great. Don't get me wrong. I love Rocky. But he's more of that action movie kind of person, and so the new Trek goes towards him instead of the intellectual Trek that goes towards us intellectuals.
So you're saying your server is not an intellectual?
Most aren't.
I guess what he means to say is that if a person was smart enough not to be a server, they wouldn't be.
Oh, no, it has nothing to do with that. I mean...
Okay. We just need to cut this whole segment out. We're going to piss a lot of people off. this is the best episode I've ever done.
I'm just thinking we're going to leave everything in and just release it as in.
We're just, man, okay, no, okay, it was a joke, no offense. I'm going to get dry hit when this episode drops. All my stuff's going to get blown up.
I don't think servers are playing this game. It's kind of hard for them. It's too complicated.
There's too much. Well,
that goes back to the intellectual part.
No. Exactly.
We're done. We're done with that. We're moving on. You guys are all assholes.
Hey, I'm a cook, you know. Cooks aren't known for being nice guys.
So what you're saying is you and Chef are very similar, is what you're telling me.
For a while, we really were similar because I was dry hitting like a motherfucker.
He's in there flipping eggs and omelets, dry hitting miners and shit. Oh yeah.
I would try and clear like 12 systems at a time.
Just, I need a minute.
You gotta calm down, man. You just gotta calm down.
We're just all over the... I told you this is gonna happen. You get somebody else with ADHD on this show. I told you we were gonna derail the whole fucking episode. Oh my god. Oh my god. So, back to the game. Tech, you were saying.
Yeah, after the server part...
I don't even know.
What was the question again?
Well, we were trying to talk about New Trek and how it appeals more to the action individual as opposed to the intellectual, if you will.
Yeah, so, you know, the New Trek is kind of like the new Star Wars. You know, it's all about the action and it's got so many plot holes. I mean, when I was in the theater and I saw the 2009 movie, one thing really irritated me, and it's never stopped irritating me, which is the USS Enterprise Constitution class was the largest Starfleet vessel of its time with a crew complement of 400. Why is the Kelvin, a ship from 30 years earlier, which granted the original Enterprise was out there then, but a Kelvin ship is it's a Constitution saucer and a nacelle. How does that have 800 people on it? The numbers just don't add up.
Well, it's the same, and it's the same reason. It's like, why is this ship that's so old in the game that we play so much more powerful than the Enterprise?
Yeah.
So I can see, and to what you're talking about, to quote a famous podcaster that I know, TechMan16. To your point, the movies are really, I always equate it to like Transformers/Star Trek. It's very action based, and everybody's fighting, and there's explosions and tech. And what else? What else is there? Tech?
Lens flares. J.K. Abrams lens flares.
Right, and they got some things wrong also because, for example, any lay Star Trek fan would know when they're doing the Kobayashi Maru test, and he goes, you know, whatever, three Klingon warbirds have decloaked. I'm like, when did Klingons get warbirds?
Klingons got,
Well, was it warbirds or was it birds of prey?
No, he said warbirds.
He said warbirds.
Warbirds.
I told him that too.
He says it. Go back and watch in the Kobayashi Maru. He says three Klingon warbirds have decloaked and are targeting us with weapons and such, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, little things like that are what really are going to kind of chap the asses, so to speak, of the original fans, because we know that Romulans have warbirds. Klingons have birds of prey.
Well, also the original Romulan ship that you see in Balance of Terror was a bird of prey and had a bird painted on the bottom. And then the Klingons had the D3s, and then you don't see a bird of prey introduced until Star Trek III, The Search for Spock.
But it's just things like that, I feel like those are easy things to do research on. The names of ships and how they're referred. Things like that. But on the flip side of all the things, and there obviously were some mistakes made, I also look at it through the lens of, because the timeline was altered, it kind of gives you some creative leeway. Because now it's the same characters, but you're able to move things around because, of course, the timeline's been changed.
True. And you could easily say that because it's been 30 years and that Nero spent time in a Klingon jail, that he could have given off Romulan information. You could have the Romulan, a Klingon bird of prey, Klingon warbird, because of the information Nero gave them that Starfleet's unaware of. So that I can
Yeah, there's a lot of things that you could tie in with that, and you could go back and forth. Some of the things that aren't mentioned that they mentioned in, like, the comic, like what I was talking about in one of the other episodes, I think.
Oh, like Data being captain of the Enterprise?
Stuff like that, but also when they talk about the Borg nanoprobes being used experimentally on the Narada. You know, they just talk about how it has advanced weaponry, and they leave it kind of up to you. If you've never read any of the comics, you're just kind of like, oh, well, because it's from the future, of course it has advanced weaponry. But they don't ever mention that the Tal Shiar was experimenting with Borg probes, and they don't talk about all those things to tie it in. So yeah. it just kind of leaves it to the viewer, and the average viewer that's going to watch it,
has no idea.
And I feel like their target audience, to be honest, and I don't know anybody that's from the production companies. You know, of course, you could say I'm wrong, but to me, it feels like their target audience is not really us. It was trying to bring in a new wave of Trek fans to try to kind of reinvigorate the Trek universe. You see what
Absolutely.
I'm saying?
Absolutely. That's exactly what it was.
And so it feels like they changed that because, you face it, now, if you were to take the way that they made Star Trek back in the day, even in the 90s, the shows and things like that, in the movies they came out in the early 2000s, if you were to try to have that now, I think they would flop because they were done in a very different way. There was very little action. And it was a lot more acting. There's a lot more, intellectual decisions, as you were saying before. So that being said, I try to look at it through that lens to where they're trying to bring in new fans. And you can't keep doing the same exact thing over and over and over. Eventually, you'll reach a point of diminishing returns. And I feel like that's what they were looking at. They said, look, Star Trek is a great idea. It's very well written. We love it. But we need to change some things for the modern audience.
100%. I agree. I have to admit, though, and also, obviously, I think we all can agree that Into Darkness was atrocious.
Really? You didn't like it? I liked it. I liked it. And I liked it because...
And they whitewashed Khan, Noonien, and Singh.
Yes, they definitely did. That was one of the issues that I had because...
And if you recall when it came out, everyone was saying, oh, it's going to be Khan. And JJ kept saying, no, this guy's John Harrisman. He's not Khan. It's not Khan. 5 minutes into the movie, my name is Khan.
But you know what's funny? He caught a lot of flack for that. Benedict Cumberbatch caught a lot of flack for his acting in that movie, but
he's a better actor than that.
But, well, here's the thing, though. Look at what he was doing, and when you compare it to the original Khan, and you compare his flamboyant and passionate style of speaking and, things like that, I feel like he did a great job of trying to capture the essence of that character.
100%. I agree with that.
And so I do agree that things could have been done differently. However, I think he did the best with what he was given, and I think that he performed well. I think that in that movie, just like the original Khan, he definitely came across as just a stone-cold, no-conscience killer. And so in that respect, I think they did a good job.
You know what's really not discussed?
I would never blame an actor for the for the writing that he's given. They're all fantastic actors. And just a lot of the writing is not done well, in my opinion.
Tech, you were saying what now?
I don't think much of anything is discussed about the age differences between the original series Kirk and New Kirk. Kirk took control of the Enterprise right after the Academy or something, so that would put him somewhere around 25 years of age or 26 maybe. And then in the original series, I think he was at least 35, 36 when he took control of the Enterprise.
He was 35, but also he was probably closer to 30 when Pike enlisted him to join.
Yeah, but like, so the original Kirk, right, he went through being a lieutenant and he had man experience and whatnot from other ships. And then it seems to me, and again, this is nothing against the actors that played the roles, but I just think because everybody's trying to gear towards a younger audience, it felt to me when 2009 came out that all these actors are like hyper young to be making life and death decisions on a galactic scale.
Yeah.
And that kind of, you know, and even Benedict Cumberbatch, I mean, he's not Ricardo Montalban, who was at least, I think, 20 years older when he first played Khan in the original series. And I liked his acting, but I just didn't get the same gravitas from Benedict Cumberbatch as, okay, I'm a hyper-engineered, well-versed, wise, sociopathic killing machine that can also transport from Earth to Kronos in the blink of an eye. So why do I need starships?
I've said it before, I'll say it again. I think when you start talking about characters that have already been done, and you start talking about remakes, I do think it's very important for the actors to play that they're playing these characters to capture the essence of that character, but also make the character their own. I mean, if you just, let's face it, if you watch the movie and everybody was directly copying the acting style of the people from that they were supposed to be portraying from the original series, it would have been a fucking circus.
I agree.
Would have been hilarious, though.
Well, I mean, can you imagine what's his name there? Chris Pine jumping around the cabin. Captain's Law. Star date. Whatever the hell it is. I mean, you know, it would have turned into a damn not another teen movie or something.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, that scene when Kirk dies and Spock screams Khan's name, you know, it's supposed to be a dramatic scene in the movie. And when I saw it in theaters, the entire audience was laughing about how stupid it looked.
Yeah, but anytime I watch The Wrath of Khan, I laugh about how stupid that sounds. I mean, how it looked. I mean, it's, again, you know, you're talking about different acting styles. And if you look back to the way acting was in the 60s, it was very different. Because a lot of people from the 60s that were getting into acting also came from stage acting.
Yeah.
And if you know the difference between stage acting, and it's just like when you look at Patrick Stewart, he has a very Shakespearean aura about him. That's how he acts.
If you look at most Star Trek actors, they all have Shakespearean play acting in their backgrounds.
And especially in the original series. So when people, they make fun of the way that William Shatner act, or they make fun of these different people, you know, you got to understand that was the norm back then. That was the standard. And so when you have someone coming from a stage background, as I've been in stage productions. And as a matter of fact, when I was younger, I was in a stage production that one of my family members directed, and somebody comes in there, and this is a true, honest to God story. I still have his autograph. we're sitting in the back, and we're in the dressing room, and we're getting ready, doing our warm ups and everything. And all of a sudden, one of the people in the play comes back there and goes, "Hey, so guys, don't freak out, but George Takei is in the audience." And I, you know, me being a Star Trek fan, even at that young age, and my mother and then some of the other people were like, "What?" You know, now we have a real actor, like, you know, a real, you know, famous person that's watching our production. And then the other half of the room was going, "Well, who's that?" But so a lot of these people came from, you know, stage acting backgrounds, and they are now, there's a huge difference between the two. You know, when you're talking about movie acting, it's different than stage acting. And so now there's a huge distinction between the two. If you watch them, you can definitely tell the difference in acting styles. But back then, the lines were much more blurred, in my opinion. So you would take your acting style from stage acting and you would just bring it to the screen. And you can see, to me, I can see it when I watch it. If I watch The Next Generation from the very beginning all the way up to the end, you can see Patrick Stewart as a person. His acting style starts to, I don't want to say change, it's not like a negative thing, but you can see how it kind of becomes more of a screen acting, if I'm making sense.
No, I get that. I agree with that.
Let's talk about the game, huh?
Okay. Oh,
that's fucking boring.
About that. Star Trek Beyond was my favorite of the three, though. I will say that.
You know what? I think, to your point, Cook, I think Star Trek Beyond was the most
Star Trek.
It was the most homage to Star Trek. It's just
that picture of the original series crew at the end. I was in the theater crying about that because it was all so raw. You know, Anton had died recently. The movie was tributed to him. Then you also had Leonard Nimoy who had died, and you see this picture at the end in his of the old crew and his old family, and it just really moved me. And that really felt like this Trek and the old Trek all kind of together now.
It did feel really, it felt really good to see that, and they did it in such a tasteful way. I think the way that they were able to meld Spock into the new Trek, I think, was also amazing. I mean, before we move on, we'll move on here in a second. I remember, you know, the movie had been out for a year or so, and, you know, my mother grew up in the 60s. I mean, she was, you know, very much, you know, aware and old enough to appreciate the shows when they were originally airing. So I told her, you know, I said, hey, you know, they came out in the new Star Trek movie. She said, oh, I haven't seen it. And, you know, so she came to visit and she was staying at the house, and we decided that we were going to put it on. And at the end of the first one, when Leonard Nimoy does the final frontier, man, she was in tears because, you know, she grew up with that original series. And so I think they did that in a really great way. I'm really glad that they did that. And I feel like on a final note on the characters, I feel like I don't think they could have cast it any better. Maybe with Khan, they could have, you know, as you say, chose someone who, you know, is not whitewashing it, but I still think that he did the best that he could with the cards that he was dealt, and I think it was a great job on his part, and I think everybody really captured the essence of the original characters while also bringing something new and exciting to the table.
Most definitely. Sorry, there's this game I think we're supposed to talk about now.
Just tell me about how you dry hit the shit out of everybody.
So before they had these alliance tags that you can do, which kind of ruined it for me, I would just go changing my name, you know, constantly. And I had a few friends with me who we would come up with a theme and change the name of the alliance, and then change the name, and then change our own names to that theme. So, like, we would do. I did a BK for Burger King, with the name being "I'm Killing It," and my name was Jack in the Box. We had another one that was In and Out. One of them was Special Sauce because he wanted to be a little different. And we would just go around dry hitting the fuck out of everyone. We would go through all the lower systems and kill everyone. And I just want to say the funniest thing about Ro is when people in this game are so selfless. It really breaks my heart to see how nice people can be, because they get so angry that you didn't steal from them. You know, the amount of messages I would get, you didn't steal from me. What's wrong with you? You're such a terrible person. I'm going to hunt you down for not stealing from me. I'm just like, oh, okay, I'm sorry. Next time I'll steal from you and kill you instead of just killing you.
I think what you're referring is that you weren't destroying miners that were OPL. You were just destroying miners.
Yeah, but it's funny when you think about that. In that concept, you know, it's okay to kill someone if you're stealing from them, but it's not okay to just kill them. And it's okay to break into their house and take everything that they own, but you still can't kill them.
But if you crack their base and then you don't raid them, then they get mad.
Yeah.
I broke into your house because I wanted to break into your house. Why didn't you take my shit? I don't want it.
I just like to kick in doors and leave shit that wasn't originally there just to freak you out for the next 20 years. Where the hell did all these D-cell batteries come from?
It's amazing how selfless people are.
People do get quite emotionally charged over it. And I think that's one of the reasons, just one of the reasons why Tech and I have just been on this ROE deal here lately, because it's a game. It's a game. And people, they act like they're Knights of the Round Table and they're on some crusade if you break ROE. Like, it's their job to uphold justice and truth. And it's a Star Trek mobile game.
You know what would be really fucking funny? If Scopely were to create a feature where if you were to break into somebody's base, you could rearrange the amount of dilithium, tritanium, and parseal that people have. So you wake up and all of a sudden, like, your dilithium has been converted to parseal, and you're like, what the fuck just happened? I take it akin to, like, break into somebody's house and you move everything an inch.
Like,
well, that's like Jadzia Dax going into Odo's quarters. Moving all of his furniture by like a millimeter or an inch to see if he would notice.
Yeah, like 3 millimeters, right?
Yeah.
I think that would be hilarious. Like, and then you have some sort of conversion rate. Like, for every one dilithium you move, it's like 3 parsteel. And so all of a sudden you wake up and you're just stockpiled on like dilithium, and you're like, I got no parsteel or tritanium. What the fuck happened?
Yeah, but knowing Scopely, they would just fuck it up, and you'd end up trying to do that, and everything would just turn into zero. Yeah, no one would have anything.
And then like 48 years later, they'd send you a compensation chest with a gold piece of latinum and 15 uncommon resources.
Exactly.
That would be funny though, because I mean, like, Cook, what level are you at?
I hit level 33 this morning.
All right. So do you raid? Do you still raid?
Oh, I love to raid. I've been so busy. I haven't had time to lately.
Here's my question. Like, do you need the resources if you raid?
Yes. Yeah, I do. Okay. I don't need it desperately at the moment because I'm sitting on like almost 600 million steel and like 170 million tritanium. And like 77 million dilithium. So I'm pretty good right now. But I know that when I go to level 34, the amount of parseal I'm going to need for my buildings is ridiculous. And for my ships, it's like 50 million dilithium per gun for my Bedro, as we call it in my alliance. And it's just... it. Costs a lot, so I know I may not need it right now, but I will need it.
That brings me into a point we're talking about. I was talking about it with Tech, and I've talked about it with several other people. I've never run out of parsteel. I've never run out of tritanium, and I've never run out of dilithium. And I was talking to somebody the other day, and they said, "Well, how do you do that? You know, how much money do you spend?" And it's not that I buy packs. What it is that I pace myself for the growth. In other words, you know, I've been at level 32 for, well, almost a month now, and I probably won't go to 33 for another month. And so I pace myself as far as that goes, so I don't have a mad scramble, like, I'm out of parsteel, I got to raid, I got to do this, because I feel like in this game, it's easy to level up, but in that same token, it's easy to outrun your resources.
Oh, definitely.
So next thing you know, you're like, yeah, I'm level 34 or 35. But all I have is a, you know, 1.2 million Burrell, whereas everybody else that's my level's got like a 2 million Enterprise.
Yeah.
And
well, I'm going to be here for like the next 6 months probably. But the odd numbers tend to be better because you can not increase your dailies, but you can increase the amount of research and stuff you can build.
Right, yeah. I can definitely get behind that.
It's funny because most people say the even numbers are better because you increase that level of stuff that you can get from dailies and from other sources.
If you can do it. I mean, if you can do it. I mean, I'm level 32 right now, and I have no ship that can destroy a level 35 swarm.
Yeah, me too.
So, you know, when I do Swarm Sundays right now, I'm having to kill like 180, 200. Yeah, 200 level 32 ships. And it's very tedious.
Oh, I know. I spent like an hour and a half doing it last night. But I always do it. I do it like 40 minutes before reset and into the 40 minutes after reset. So I can knock out my dailies for both days.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I do that as well because I like cause I think for me, right, I don't know what it is for you guys, but I got to do 75. I kill 75 for the non-heroic. And for me, I think my dailies are 50. So I just do like 50 for day one, and then I move into the 25 for day two, and then that 25 gets me the top two tier swarm dailies, you know, like your 50 points and your 35 points. Mm-hmm. I'm still using my North Stars to kill swarms because they still work.
Honestly, my North Star I still use because it's my 40 mining ship to help me relieve stuff.
Oh, I'm the odd man out. I scrapped my North Star about 3 months ago, so.
I thought about it. I almost did it, and then I started doing stuff in Warp 40 space, and I was like, well, you know what? This actually helps me out right now. So until I get my third faction ship, I'm going to hold on to this North Star.
There's no way I'm getting three faction miners anytime soon. I got a Covortan and an Antares, and both of those were Warp 40, and I think I'm going to stick right where I'm at for a while.
Yeah, I got those two at Warp 40, and I got a Max Horizon.
I think the Covort is probably the best out of the three faction miners.
Yeah, with the crystal, because everything needs crystal. I mean, the bubblegum machine on your station requires crystal.
Yeah.
Bubblegum? Where, squirrel?
I know, this episode is just, this episode's so all over the place. Whatever, let's just go with.
Yeah, I'm not editing anything out. Well, save for a few points, but other than that.
This is definitely going to be awesome.
So, you were talking about the just dry hitting everybody. Would it be safe to say, or have you found this to be true, or did you find this to be true when you were a lower level? Pretty much, like, nobody at the lower levels really goes by ROE.
Well, back then, it was more of a, you know, when I even first learned about ROE back in the teens, when everyone was doing G2 materials, and finding G2 node was as hard as it was before this update to find a G3 node, because pretty much everyone in the server started about a year ago and is grown together. So we've always had these issues finding resources because we were all doing it at the same time.
Yeah, you level 40 something players, don't try to act like you have spent as little money as we have, you liars.
Finding a node was always so hard. So then I'd start dry hitting people, not knowing, you know, what I was doing, because back then I was in a one of those, you know, baby starter alliances, and it was a dead alliance, like all. And so I'm dry hitting this guy, and you know, people are asking me, "What's my alliance row?" And I'm like, "What's an alliance row?" And they're like, "Your rules of engagement." I'm like, "My rules of engagement, I see a ship and I kill it."
What are you talking about? I'm like a cat. If it fits, I sits.
Hey, yeah, exactly. I got two things I go by. Does it say easy or very easy? And then, of course, they go and say, you know, why are you doing this? Because, you know, it costs you resources to kill us. And I'm like, yeah, but it doesn't cost me resources to kill one of you. I can kill like 50 of you in one shot.
Easy and very easy. That sounds like some people I know's rules of dating.
But when two ships really love one another, and there's really chemistry between them, then they go red.
Yeah, so we actually did compete for a bit there, but I could never compete on that level. I don't have the finances to do that.
Yeah, that's another very real thing that, you know, and nothing against any guests that we've had on, or nothing against anybody who doesn't want to disclose it. That's your business. It's none of ours, but... The elephant in the room that is 48 feet tall and weighs as much as a condominium is that all of you that have the power that you have is because you spent a lot of money. And which of course, I'm not trying to vilify those people. And that's what you're interested in, and you have the means to do that, and that's what you want to do. Or if you don't have the means and you just have like 3 maxed out credit cards and you're just sitting in an empty house with a beanbag chair with a foreclosure sign out front and you enjoy this game, then, you know, that's up to you. But there is a huge, they talk about the paywall. There's a huge difference between your free-to-play player and your pay-to-play player. And it's when you start talking about strategies and how you play the game, it's not the same. So having rules, this goes back to ROE, having these rules for everyone to abide by, well, not everybody's on the same, you know, on the same playground. I mean, it ain't even the same damn sport. If you're, you know, this doctor or what have you, and you can spend thousands of dollars a month on this mobile game, well, you're going to be able to do in a month what it's going to take me a year to do.
Yeah.
Or six.
Or six, or 28,000. I mean, whatever, what have you. So what really kind of, I say it upsets me. I know what they're saying when they try to help, but people like, even like me, who I'm kind of a hybrid person, which I haven't spent any money in quite a while, but, you know, I have spent some money. You telling me how to play the game it's kind of like me taking my truck off-road and then me telling you in your Volkswagen Beetle how to go through the same trail I went through. It's two completely different ways of playing the game. So we have to keep in mind that you have your three players. You have your big spenders, you have your somewhere in the middle spenders, and then you have your no spenders. And for that no spender to get an enterprise, I mean, you might get it by the time you retire.
Pretty much.
Well, you just got to play the game a lot and utilize a lot of the in-game mechanics to really pull yourself forward.
I know, but you run into a time issue because someone posted a calculator for a ship calculator blueprint in Reddit today, and I took a look at it to see how long it would take to build an enterprise. And it calculates that if you were, say, strictly free-to-play and just grinding on your reputation, doing your dailies, the daily resource use of reputation, doing the daily faction points that you can get, you do all that. I was looking at 157 days till I got enough blueprints for an enterprise, bearing that I already had 30,000 credits.
And also keep in mind, that doesn't include promoting officers, buying anything from the faction stores. That's just hoarding those resources.
Exactly.
157 days, you say? Start the fucking clock.
Let's spin that shit up.
Yeah, now, meanwhile, if you go and do what a lot of people do, which is like buy a officer pack, which comes with 13,000 faction credits.
For me, it's 15.2.
Okay. So I guess for me, it's 15.2 as well then. But you do that, and that gives you a boost, but that'll only give you 10 blueprints for the enterprise out of 150. Therefore, you'd have to spend $1,500 if you were going to buy an enterprise just to get a ship.
Just to interject here, my Ultra Federation recruit pack only has 9,800 Federation credits.
I think that's for a couple of reasons. Number one, you're in the 20s, and number two, you don't spend a bunch of money on the game.
Yeah.
Which brings us to another point, and I'm sure we can talk a bit about this on our planned drunk episode, where to me, I don't think it's fair that if I spend whatever it is, if I go out and spend $100 on an officer recruit pack, I get 15,200, and I get like 10,000 ultra recruit tokens, 10,000 premium recruit tokens. But if Tech goes to spend the same amount of money, he gets considerably less. I don't I just don't agree with that. If we're going to spend money, it should be, the resources should be valued at essentially the same dollar amount across the board.
Yeah, but and the one reason I will understand where Crappily comes from with this.
Shots if, fired.
If you say Crappily?
Yeah, I did.
That's shots fired.
If you are, say, at Inchoate's level and you buy an officer pack, you're going to be needing a way larger amount of the stuff that's in there than you would at, say, level 15.
Right. But my thing is that how is Scopely able to tell you that just because you're a lower level, your money's not worth as much as the next guy?
I don't think that they're telling you that your money's not as worth. They're trying to tell you that the money is worth equally to you, the same percentage for your level as it is the percentage for that level. So say it's worth 10% of what you need at this level. Well, it's 10% of what you need at any of the levels. So as you go, that 10% gets bigger and bigger exponentially. I'm not trying to defend them. I'm just trying to look logically at the issue.
No, I see it. I see what you're saying. But like I say, at the same time, I think that this is it's also another strategy for getting people to spend more money. Because let's face it, if you were at like level 20 and you spent, you know, you were able to get, you know, 5 billion par steel from a pack or something like that, well, it would boost you up. You're going to be able to grow quicker.
Exactly. You're not going to need to buy anything until you get to the mid-30s.
You're trying to keep the small man down.
It's how they roll, man.
Yeah, well, anyway, I digress. So that was, anyway, we kind of got off on a tangent there. But it's important. We need to cover these things. These are life-altering things, multi-billion-dollar companies and so forth.
Yeah, ROE, dry-hitting, pillaging, murdering ships, chemistry, boom. What do you like about our current ROE, and what do you don't like?
I don't like dick moves. And the reason, and the thing about dick moves that I
which subsection was dick moves under?
Exactly, that's my point. It is not a violation to kill someone in swarm space because we had a vote when we did the initial swarm, or when we did the initial row. You know, should swarm space be a no PvP zone? And it got turned down, saying yes, it should be a PvP zone. We are okay with it being a PvP zone. There was a lot of debate about it. So it was deemed okay to be a PvP zone. Augment space was deemed okay to be a PvP zone. It was all voted on by the admirals of the top 100 alliances. So therefore, when I go and kill you in swarm space, don't go and bitch at me about how that's a dick move and start dry hitting and targeting my alliance because you're butthurt over losing a few thousand modulators.
So would you say that you are grossly for or grossly against ROE?
I am for Rev Deuce's ROE. Jeep started saying something great the other day called WWRDD. What would Rev Deuce do?
Well, I enjoy some of the guy's content, and I agree with some of what he has to say, but I digress. The my thing is our ROE as it stands now and how it's been voted on.
I think we're the most peaceful server in the game.
Do you?
Yeah, everyone's they try and make anything that's a PvP issue a dick move. You killed me within row, but it's a dick move, so I'm gonna target all your guys because butthurt. You know, they want to get rid of all PvP unless they're aware and can do whatever the hell they want.
Well, to a degree, I think that the whole point of this game is the huge PvP aspect.
Well, and that's where Crappily really screwed up, because if they advertise this as a PvP game, they want this to be a PvP game, yet all they give us is mining to do, and the only thing that actually has any solid rewards is mining and hunting hostiles. No rewards and benefits to PvP. And the ships that are really good for PvP are really expensive and hard to do. So right. There's no benefits to the PvP, which is why a lot of people don't do it.
I can see that too. That is actually a brilliant point. I don't think anybody's brought that up, is the fact that...
Dude, I brought it up in our ROE podcast.
When you were talking about... You didn't bring up events.
I said nobody's incentivized to do PvP because rewards for PvP suck.
Yes, but what you said is what he's talking about is the events, event-based things, like the live target practice. The live target practice does not have great rewards.
Well, and also the live target practice is stupid. You can only go to one system in each of the faction space. You have to use, like, these tiny-ass ships on people who are, like, in the 40s and stuff. People have to move their bases to lower systems just so they can reach the system to do the PvP.
So the one thing that I did like that they did that PvP one time on, I think, one of the Borg arcs, where it was basically, like, weapons-free. The kills counted anywhere in the freaking universe.
Yes.
And
we had one problem with that, though.
I thought that was cool.
I did, too. So I had two problems with that, though. Problem one was immediately everyone in the server wrote Discord when saying, we're still maintaining row. You know, figure it out amongst your alliance. Don't go dry hitting. And then the other issue was the lower level players were still restricted to those three systems.
Yeah, it wasn't the same across the board.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I was trying to PvP at that time. And I just, this one Vidar and just destroyed every single Tal of Fyndra jellyfish. And it was like, wait, what are you doing here? He's like, oh, dude, I'm doing my PvP event. I'm like, with a Vidar? Like, yeah, everything counts. Bye. And he just killed everybody.
See, I like that though. I think it's freaking cool. Bring what you got. I mean, it's just like drag racing. You know, heads up. You know. Both start here, and you think you can beat me? Let's put some money down and look what happens. That to me is interesting.
What he did is he went into the systems for the lower levels that could only use certain ships to get PvP points. He just wailed on all the low-level ships.
And see, I think that was kind of a dick move because those guys didn't get the points for not hitting, for being hit by a Vidar.
Right, yeah. And I can get behind that. I definitely can. That's a dick move.
That is a legitimate dick move.
It's a legitimate dick move, but here's the thing. Again, I think it for the interest of, you know, it's kind of, I guess it goes to more of a philosophy of life, is that if the rules are the same across the board, which is what they should have done, then I think it would have been okay. But the fact that the lower levels were restricted to that certain system, yeah, that to me, it's not playing field. Even if they would have changed it to have a level bracket, okay, you know, if you're level 30 to 33, then that you guys PvP and the points will count or whatever. There are a few things they could have done to tweak it, but I like the idea behind it is the point I'm getting.
Here's a suggestion, and stop me if you think I'm crazy, but how about this?
You're crazy.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Very good point. But every Monday, at Rush Monday, no ROE.
I've said it on one of our last podcasts, or at least one of our last podcasts, maybe even two, that I think that Scopely should not have pre-planned events on certain days. I think it should just be like whatever happens that day. Like maybe Lat Rush will be on Wednesday.
Yeah, you said that on the row one the other day.
No, but you're still staying within ROE. What I'm saying is, Lat Rush Monday, we all know it's Monday. Let's just suspend ROE. It's PvP free-for-all. And you try to mine, and you try to get your points.
Good luck with that one.
Yeah, I think that might just have to be an event I skipped. Which, I don't mind much Latinum these days anyway, because it's such a pain trying to find a node. People sit on nodes for days at a time.
I stopped mining it months ago. It's a Ponzi scheme.
I usually just get it done with Parse Steel and Tritanium and stuff.
I mine two MAT nodes a day.
I got a crystal node and a lat node. And here in my system, there's like 15 warships protecting other lat nodes.
Yeah, that's because mining Monday is a dry hitter's dream.
It is. It's great.
It was always my favorite day to hit. And then, of course, at night, I would go and imitate another alliance like STFC or Meld. And then I'd go and mine peacefully because they are alliances that are so big, they can't keep track of themselves. And they have so many different alliances with the same tags that it's easy to hide there and just mine peacefully.
Then you'd also bust out some STFC tags, right? And just this dry hit a bunch of people and then have STFC being blamed.
Yep. That's a lot of fun, especially when they had like 8 alliances. They were turning into a monopoly.
Yeah, those were the days.
Yeah, that was so much fun back then. I started doing a bounty thing with people would go and make a request to me from all various alliances, including STF, L, most. They'd go and say, message me and ask me for a type of node. Like, hey, Cook, can you give me a gas node? And I'd say, okay, what system? On it, tell me, and then I go and clear the entire system. You'd be like, but I just want a one node. I say, yeah, but now when you go in and get it, no one's going to know that you were the one who hired the hit.
I think I hear the FBI knocking on your door.
What eventually got you to follow ROE?
I had two issues happening. One was I was getting up there on levels. I was like level 25, 26 somewhere. And I needed to be mining more to keep up with the dailies and the resources that I needed to upgrade my ships and stuff. Because I wasn't paying to keep, getting materials and stuff. I was doing it mostly free. I paid for things here and there, but only if I needed to. And also, I was also doing all the diplomatic stuff for Dead on Discord, because our leader Shinzon wasn't on Discord much, so I handled all the diplomatic stuff for Dead. I went through the Commodores, and we would discuss issues and stuff, and they would carry out anything that I figured out for them. And I actually built up a lot of alliances for Dead at the time, even though I wasn't even in the alliance. And then they came out with the update for the alliance tags, where you could go and tag a specific alliance as hostile. And if they tag my alliance as hostile, I'm not going to be able to just change my name and watch people be dumbfounded that they don't, because they don't know who I am. Which was hilarious, watching people who had no idea who I all because I changed my name. And I always had Cook in the name, too, or some kind of food derivative.
I just got dry hit by fucking fried Twinkie.
deep fried butter whacked my ship.
That sounds explicit.
I had this one guy once who I changed the alliance to Camelot, and my name was King Arthur's Cook. And this guy says to me, after I dry hit him, he's like, aren't you supposed to be like royalty and above this and all about law and order? And I'm like, why do you think that? He's like, because you're King Arthur. And I said, King Arthur's Cook. I'm a cook. I'm still an asshole.
So the takeaway from this episode, ladies and gentlemen, is that cooks are assholes.
All the time. Haven't you ever watched Kitchen Nightmares or Hell's Kitchen?
Yeah, with Gordon Ramsay. That's why I said you shut him up, because you're such a good cook.
Yeah. He actually, one time I did actually want them to do an episode of Kitchen Nightmares at my restaurant because I figured it'd be a nice way for me to get a free like facelift on the restaurant, get some new stuff in. And they said to me I was too successful. They wouldn't come in.
You don't suck bad enough.
Exactly. They're like, what's wrong with you?
I just like to point out that my wife watches a lot of that stuff, and every time she watches one, I look up these restaurants, and I hate to break it to you people, 9 out of 10 of them are still closed.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen that too. You know, I mean, I've been offered to go on like Chopped and stuff like that, but I don't do it because I always say if I go away on one of these shows, who's going to be there to watch the restaurant?
How long do you have to leave for one of these shows?
I don't know, but every time I go away on vacation, I lose half my staff. So best thing to do is not go away on vacation.
It's because you can't trust your servers. They're not intellectual enough.
I thought we were editing that out.
This is now called Star Trek Fleet Command Trek Talk Cooks, the Full Offense episode.
I should have a TVMA warning or something on this thing.
Warning. If you serve food, you're going to hate everyone in this podcast.
And warning, if you work with me, don't listen to this podcast.
How many people work with you?
In the game, one.
Okay.
And he happens to be my server.
God, man, you're going to get dry hit so hard. God, I'm going to dry hit you.
You're going to leave your alliance and gonna be like, I'm on a warpath with this dude. And then 2 seconds later, it's like, hey, what do I need to bring up to what table? Like, dude, you just killed my ship. It's like, I know, but what's the food I need to bring out to what table?
Oh, man.
He's out there. He's like, excuse me, sir. There's a problem with my steak. Hold on a minute. He's chasing my miner. Just give me a second.
Sorry, he's chasing your what? It's a Star Trek thing. I'll get to you in a second, sir. Here's a free refill, okay?
Make sure you leave us a good review on Yelp.
You know, it's actually kind of scary, you guys, because there are times when I've actually been fighting off raids or dealing with alliance issues or doing some or resetting a miner, and I'm in the middle of trying to make drinks or shuck oysters. Well, a customer's asking me for something. I'm like, I'll get it for you. 1 second. Let me just finish this.
So that would be a really interesting newspaper clipping right there. Customer gets food poisoning because cook was unattentive defending miners.
No one's ever gotten food poisoning at my restaurant.
No one's gotten food poisoning. Hey, you know what? That good for you, man.
I uphold a very high level of quality control at my restaurant, which is why I've been able to stay open this whole time.
Do you serve gah?
No. Although, if you go out to the outdoor dining, I'm sure you might find fresh picked.
God.
It's best served live.
And fresh.
Oh, and fresh. God. Also served Heart of Targ.
Well, you could probably take my 22-ounce Black Angus bone and ribeye and make it look like a Heart of Targ. But it's so good just aged in the beer marinade
for up to 2 weeks. This has become a cooking show. this is the inaugural episode of Enterprise Galley Nightmares.
You know, I have to admit, one of the reasons I fell in love with Deep Space Nine though was because of Cisco's being a New Orleans restaurant. And they're always talking about gumbo and jambalaya, stuff like that. And that's the food that I make. That's my restaurant right there. I am Cisco's. It's a family-run business. My mother and father work with me. My mom does the baking. My dad does the shopping. I do pretty much everything else. And, you know, it's a family-run establishment that's doing Louisiana food. We fly our ingredients from Louisiana, and everything, you know, it's that made me love DS9 was because of Cisco's.
We have talked so much shit this episode. I'm waiting for the subpoena from CBS for the lawsuit.
Why?
Well, you want CBS to sue us or Crapley?
Oh, God. At least everybody hates Scopely, so, you know, we got a leg up there.
Actually, that line just reminded me of Doc Peters as Joseph Cisco being like, can you believe he didn't even know the difference between Creole food and Cajun food? And I'm just like, fuck, I don't know the difference.
Oh, my God. We have to get back on track at some point.
Sorry, I'll stop digressing. It's my ADH.
This has been a fun episode.
Jesus, this is me.
This isn't really an episode or an interview. This is just three nerds talking and praying to God we get more than 50 views. This is great.
I'll make sure we get more than 50 views.
Are you just gonna keep clicking refresh?
Yeah.
He's like, he got 47 views and 43 of them were my mom who couldn't figure out how to get the video to play.
Well, you have to do it on different do it on different IP addresses. So
that's not true. I once watched my own YouTube video like 5 times while I was checking to see something in it, and I had 5 views on it.
All right, Cook, you have the final thought.
I have so many thoughts. So, oh my God,
Kirk, you're done. You're done, man. I'm cutting you off, dude.
I'm good. I've recentered my ESPN or whatever it is.
Your chakra.
No, I like vanilla.
Okay.
All right.
So, okay. To summarize. I can't summarize because it's going to take me longer to summarize than it did for the whole damn episode.
All right, I'll summarize. The only non ADHD person here. We went from Star Trek Voyager, where he got into Star Trek Voyager, kind of like Nog, where he learned to read because of Star Trek Voyager and Harry Potter. Apparently, we went to Nog as being the favorite character because. He has the most complete story arc of anybody in any Star Trek series. Then we went to Star Trek Into Darkness, being a sucky film, according to Cook. New Trek kind of being hybridized with Discovery and Picard. Then we went into the game, where Cook was driving the fuck out of everybody, and that was really fun. And then the whole targeting thing came out and really sucked, because then target's on your back forever. And then now he's going to level 34 at some point and requires a whole shitload of par steel, but he's been too busy to raid because he's busy working on his food. He runs a very high-end Jake Sisko-like or Joseph Sisko-type Louisiana-style restaurant. Can I summarize that up accurately?
And servers suck.
Oh, you had to leave that.
He just had to mention that.
I'm just saying, man. There was full offense back there, so I'm trying to keep the trend going. I would also like to take this moment to explain to everyone that the views and opinions expressed are not necessarily the views and opinions of the hosts of this show.
I'd also like to stress that there is a worker shortage of people not wanting to come and work. So if anyone looking for a job, I am hiring a lot.
Excellent. I'm sure you'll get a lot of job interviews from this podcast.
Well, couldn't hurt to try. but I do also just want to say one little thing about dick moves shouldn't start wars. And I'm sick and tired of people screaming out dick moves. There's no such thing as a dick move.
So one of the things that we do at the end, we got to stop this. This is painful almost now.
I'm sorry.
We like to try to give the people that we have on an opportunity to say anything, make any comments, anything that maybe we haven't covered that they want to cover, to address the listeners that maybe the listeners.
Respect your alliance leaders. They have a very hard job dealing with everyone in the alliance. If you have an issue, please talk to them. And if you're thinking about moving on to a different alliance, please talk to them instead of just leaving and just wondering who just left. Because your alliance leaders, all the admirals in the game, go through a lot of hard work. This is like a second job. And we just want to do what's best for our members and for the alliance overall. So work with them, talk to them. If you have any issues or needs, they are there for you. Or they suck.
Or they suck. You heard it here. You're a very important person. You haven't helped me. You're a dick. Are you a server? Jesus.
That being said, I want you guys, whoever listening, to visit Cook's server, the Food Network server. Cook hosts a bunch of trivia with Star Wars, Star Trek, various other things. There's a whole bunch of in-game help, and there's a bunch of food and drinks on there that will make you either make your mouth water, it'll drive up your blood pressure, or you will die of a heart attack just by looking at it.
The one, yeah.
I encourage everybody to check it out.
Everybody should. It's a great server, and Cook occasionally live streams on there too. That's pretty cool. So. With the I want to say one last thing before we move on. This is really fun, and I made some jokes at people's expense. You know, we don't mean any offense by it. I guarantee it. It's just a joke. So please don't take any of that seriously. If you do take it seriously, I mean, well, actually, I don't know what I mean. I don't know what to tell you. It's you. So that being said, you know, it's something we like to do. It's something fun. We know we goofed off. Appreciate you if you've made it this far in the episode, haven't completely tuned out our ADHD movements. We appreciate you listening.
100 remember that star.
Remember that we do it for fun. We do it to try to bring content. We don't expect to be millionaires because of an STFC podcast or a Star Trek theme podcast. So we appreciate you listening. And a teaser for you. Working on speaking to someone who is pretty high level, never spent money on the game. So keep listening. We're going to try to have that person. Anyway, Tech.
Anyways, Cook, I appreciate you, man. Thanks for coming back, or thanks for coming on. I hope you come back. We'll talk more Nerd Trek. I think that'll be fun.
I'd love to, anytime. Thank you.
And this has been Trek Talk with Tech and Kirk. I'm TechMan16.
And I can't pay attention.
And we'll see you guys next time.